Some of it was hit by nukes, they say. But Anchorage is still there. And now a trail that runs from here to here.
He indicated a point that was near the redoubt, tracing past its location and past the ransacked ville they had encountered. The trail then continued up and around until it snaked its way into Anchorage.
How many villes along that route?
Hard to say. Some are villes. Some no more than one. Maybe two huts where trappers tried to stay alive. Maybe eight, ten in all.
We stayed in one last night, and it had been ripped to shreds by something. What was that?
Thompson paused. For a moment, it seemed as though he would refuse to answer, as though each word had to be considered carefully before he was ready to speak.
We don't have that much to do with the villes on the trail. Lazy fuckers, who want something for nothing. Don't realize you have to work for everything in this life. They only want to take. So we don't mix with them. Not unless we got something we really want to trade. Some of the trappers, they know what work is. They're okay. But the villes, don't know what could be giving them trouble. Maybe they're just fighting with each other. It wouldn't be the first time that it's happened.
It sounded reasonable, plausible even. But there was something a little too contrived about the answer. All of the companions felt the same thing as one. By asking the question, J.P. had taken them from safe to stormy waters. They would have to be careful now. As if to emphasize this, Thompson put the map back on the wall and brought the meal to an abrupt close.
Best if you return to your hut now. Tomorrow you go out with a hunt party. Catch food for yourself and us. Starts at sunup, so you need to rest. You catch nothing, you eat nothing. That's the way it is with us.
As they returned to their hut, across the dark and quiet ville, with every inhabitant inside their own dwelling, shored up against the night, they could only wonder if the hunt party would turn them into the prey. Early next morning found them standing in the center of the ville, faced with a group of hunters. The hunt leader who had found them the day before was leading the new party, and he introduced the six hunters, including himself, to the companions. They were a motley crew. Apart from the hunt leader, who was named Macindoe, there were three who had either withered arms or limps, and two who had missing limbs. One had only one arm, and the other had no legs, but highly developed arm muscles to propel himself on a sled.
This is Connolly, Quinn, Ferguson, McHugh, that there's Taggart.
The man on the sled was Taggart, and it was hard for any of them to take their eyes from him. The idea that he could be a good hunter was something that was difficult to assimilate. Yet he had to be, for the Inuit had no time or space for those who couldn't contribute.
Don't worry about him. Worry about yourselves. You don't get nothing, you don't eat nothing.
I was just wondering. I note that you all have Irish or Scots-derived names. Do any of you have any native names at all?
Macindoe looked at Doc strangely, like Thompson the day before. Was the old man trying to be funny, or was he just crazy? The other Inuit betrayed little, but a few swift exchanges of expression warned the companions that Doc was on thin ice, thinner than they would have to traverse this day.
These are our native names. We get two, one for our fathers and one for the Almighty, just as it was handed down to us.
Ah, I think I begin to see.
Taggart spat a phlegm ball, which landed at Doc's feet.
Can we get going before I freeze my balls off?
Right.
Macindoe nodded, and with no further words wasted, indicated that they move out. The companions fell in with the hunting party. There was no conversation among the hunters, and so the companions likewise declined to talk, either to their hosts or among themselves. They were led through the short trail to the concealed exit that lay on the wider trading trail that ran through the forest. Without a word, the party led the companions farther along the trail than they had progressed before Doc's detour, and they were surprised to find that the trail began to wind back down toward the icy plains. Although it was still bitingly cold at this level, the increased foliage and the fact that they were on the lower slopes of volcanic activity warmed the area in relation to the plains, and they couldn't understand why the trail didn't proceed through the seemingly more inviting forested areas. Jack suddenly stopped. Ryan and JB, noticing this, also held back, attracting the attention of Mildred and Christy. Only Doc continued with the Inuit, seemingly in a world of his own. It was only when Macindoe held up his hand to halt them that Doc looked back with astonishment on his face. The Inuit hunt leader also looked back and nodded with satisfaction.
You hear it too?
Huh. Three or four, tracking us. Stop now. Will they attack?
Not in daylight. Probably coming back from hunting themselves. Maybe tired. Could take us, but the odds are not good. Won't say bears are clever, but they can learn to be cunning. If we were a smaller group...
We take them?
Not if we can't see them. Going there to get them and we get separated, we'll end up easy meat. We wait. See who moves first.
Mexican standoff.
What's a Mexican? Some kind of bear we ain't seen before?
Just an expression, dear boy. Meaning that neither of us wishes to be the first to move.
Macondo didn't reply. He just gave a brief nod, with an expression that suggested all his suspicions about Doc had just been confirmed. They stood on the exposed path, following the sounds of the bears as they moved through the undergrowth. Ryan was sure he caught sight of a patch of fur through the green, but he might have been mistaken. Like the others, he had drawn a weapon, pulling the stire and gently racking a shell.
Think they're gone?
I don't know, Mildred.
Must be well fed and tired. Bastards.
So that's why the trading trail doesn't make more use of the slope for warmth and windbreak.
Might be colder down there, but at least you can see what's coming at you.
They continued on in silence until they moved through the sparsest clumps of tree and brush, down onto the flat of the plain where all was rock and ice, and the trail became fainter, harder to follow. Macondo stopped and looked around him, ignoring the screaming winds that battered them from all sides now that they were in the open.
Thing is, up there the game can hide from you, and a lot of it's got a hell of a punch if it decides to fight back. Less of it down here, but easier to see, and less chance of it getting you first. Our ancestors found that out the hard way.
Sounds right to me. You can't argue with experience.
Experience may have been correct, but it was not necessarily the easiest route. The enlarged hunting party continued on across the plain, following the trade trail that was just visible in the conditions. There was no snow falling, but the clouds had settled heavy overhead, and the winds were blowing in from the volcanoes in the distance, making the stench of sulfur stronger than ever in the already sour air. The ground was hard beneath their feet, each footstep jolting up to the knee joint as heels hit solid rock and ice. As they moved farther from the forest, there were banks of snow blown up against the sudden upward thrusts of rock wrenched from the earth by the post-Skydark upheavals. Some may have had hidden caves like the one they had stumbled into. It seemed like years before, though it was only a matter of days. And all the while, the Inuit stayed silent, padding across the plains, Taggart propelling himself on the icy rock with more ease than the others, his sled taking to the conditions. There was no sign of any game. Nor was there any sign of another dwelling or settlement.
Macondo, tell me something. How far is it to the next vill from here?
No vill for a few good hours, maybe more. Next up is a fur trapper, just two huts. Used to live there with his wife, two kids.
Used to?
Something come and rip shit out of him, just like the last place on the trail.
But it hasn't got your vill.
Macondo fixed Ryan with a glare.
We ain't on the trail, and we keep ourselves hidden. You have trouble figuring out why with all your stupid questions?
Ryan bit back an answer, choked on the desire to lash out. He wasn't the sort of man to take such an insult, yet he could see why the Inuit had spoken that way. The questions were stupid, deliberately so, as he wished to probe without seeming too obvious. Guess he'd failed there. Maybe he'd need to keep his eye out to watch his back.
There! Over north-northeast! Deer!
The companions followed the hunter's indication. About a half a mile away, but moving slowly toward them, was a herd of 20 deer. They looked fatigued, slow, and hungry. Judging from their height, they should have been carrying more bulk, but they would still supply the vill with a good source of meat if they could be brought down. The Inuit snapped into a practiced maneuver, spreading out and moving swiftly across the packed ice and rock. So Ryan decided that his people would best act as an independent hunt party from this point onward. The deer were headed for the shelter and comparative warmth of the uplands, and rather than head back to the wastes and a lingering chill, were attempting to reach safety by outrunning the hunters coming toward them. The Inuit each chose a deer, or a pair if they ran together, and closed in across the plain. They shot on the run, raising their rifles as their fur-wrapped feet pounded across the slippery plain. Taggart thrust himself forward with one gigantic push, angling his sled so he headed for his appointed target with a clear and flat run, pulling his sharps from his shoulder as he glided across the surface, drawing a bead and firing, bringing down one of the deer with a clean shot that drilled through its skull. Others weren't such good shots, taking wild aim and firing over and above the deer, as well as wounding them. The companions moved more methodically, using their skills to head off running deer and pick them off with single shots. Doc, however, got carried away at the noise and sounds of battle around him and loosed the charge from his lama toward one unfortunate creature. It flew sideways into another deer. For a moment, all reason once more extinguished in Doc's mind.
Come here, you bastards!
Taggart set his sled on course for another brace of deer, propelling himself on a long slide and leveling his rifle. It took him across the path of a wounded deer that was galloping in wildly varying directions, blinded by fear and pain. Taggart snapped off a second shot. The creature stumbled into his sled, catching the back of it with a force that sent it spinning, picking up pace as it hit an ice patch. Thrown off balance, it was all Taggart could do to stay on the sled. As he battled to regain control, the sled careered into a snowbank, coming to a sudden halt. His momentum threw him from the sled, flailing helplessly for a second in the air before hitting the rocks, taking the full impact on his left shoulder.
My shoulder! My fucking shoulder!
The hunt was almost complete. A dozen of the deer were down, and the hunters were beginning to round up the corpses, dragging them together across the ice. Even though the creatures were malnourished, they were still relatively heavy, and as he and JB hauled on a carcass, Ryan was glad that the ice covering the rock would assist them to drag the spoils partway back to the vill.
McIndoe, what do we do when we get off the plane?
I send someone ahead. Others will come to help us haul it home. I must see to Taggart.
Without another word, McIndoe set off toward the snowbank where the stricken hunter lay. Ryan watched him, and then some instinct told him to follow. He chased after the hunt leader, and was close enough to hear the following exchange across the wastes.
Shattered. Hurts like hell. Useless after this. And what use is that?
Sure. If there's any chance that
I'll be a burden. You know that can't happen. Better it happens here. You know what to do.
Ryan arrived in time to see McIndoe retrieve Taggart's sharps and chamber a shell.
What the fuck?
This doesn't concern you, One-Eye. But don't mess with something that has nothing to do with you.
He's right. You may have your ways, but we have ours. I'm useless now. There's only one thing to be done.
Just chill you?
You think I like this? Taggart and me grow up together.
Just do it, for fuck's sake.
McIndoe raised the sharps and put the barrel to the prone hunter's temple.
Goodbye, friend.
Just do it.
McIndoe turned away, face impassive, but body language tight and tense. Ryan pondered on what he had seen. It wasn't shocking. He could see why they did this. But if this was their attitude toward their own, then he was damn sure that his people were equally dispensable. They'd have to be triple red careful from now on. In the days following the first hunting party, the companions tried to keep to themselves as much as possible, something that was made considerably easier to achieve by the attitude of the Inuit toward them. The natives of the settlement went about their daily business with a reserve toward one another that seemed exaggerated to ridiculous extremes when it came to their guests. It was usual for the inhabitants of a vill to be curious about strangers. Be they friendly or hostile, the native dwellers usually had some desire to know about the strangers who had landed in their midst. Curiosity brought questions, brought answers, brought information. A simple piece of human behavior that drove so much interaction, and which time and the ravages of the new cost had done nothing to change. Except here, in this vill for which they didn't even have a name. Thompson had been so reluctant to converse with Ryan, in any sense other than the strictly necessary, that he hadn't even told them that the vill had a name. It was possible to speculate that it retained some old pre-dark name as the last vestige of the links with the Scots and Irish settlers who had integrated with the Inuit. But that was all it could be, mere speculation. For several days, the companions joined with the Inuit to take their food from the cookhouse that served the whole settlement. Not a word was said by any of the natives, not the most casual of inquiries, nor even the simplest gesture of acknowledgement. It was as though the companions had always been there, and were not even of the slightest interest. That did not, however, mean that they were to be left to their own devices. Thompson had been exact in his terms of their stay. The Inuit worked hard to survive in the climate, and the fact that they were well fed and their dwellings well maintained was owed to hard work. Regular hunting parties set off each day to track for food, and for skins and furs that could be stripped, cleaned, cured, and used for both clothing and bedding. They had little in the way of woven materials. Old woolens, cottons, and some man-made fabrics that had lasted since the pre-dark days were now at the end of any life that could be wrung from them, requiring a return to older traditions. When the hunting parties returned, and the carcasses had been dragged up onto the slopes and into the vill, teams of Inuit would set to work bleeding and skinning the carcasses before they were quartered, some of the meat being used fresh, the rest salted to be preserved. The hides and pelt were then taken by other members of the tribe, and the processes of curing and cleaning begun before the prepared hide and pelt were worked into clothing and blankets. It was a well-organized production line, and worked in speed and silence. While this went on, there were other activities. A small herd of livestock was kept for milk, and a constant guard, with teams working in rotation, kept the herd safe from wolf and bear. Sec patrols also circled the forested area at regular intervals for both human and animal intrusion. There were some attempts to grow vegetables using the trough methods that J.B. and Mildred had seen back in the ruined villa on the plain. The sight of these was something that gave the armorer pause for thought. Had the Inuit taken the idea by force when attacking the vill? Something that troubled at the corners of his mind, for there was no real evidence that the Inuit were interested in taking on other vills in combat. Indeed, their existence seemed to revolve around maintaining a certain isolation. Meanwhile, while the hunting and sect parties made their rounds, within the settlement, each had their appointed tasks. The gathering and preparation of wood to fuel their stoves, the rendering of tallow of use in lamps and stoves, the maintenance of the huts and cabins, the preparation of food and drink, and the cleaning of the dwellings. Each of these tasks was the duty of a small group of Inuit, who would set about each day with methodical stoicism. There was no rush, but neither was there any sense of complacency. The whole tribe worked as one unit, and seemed to operate without the need for any obvious communication. Ryan and Christy were resting in their hut. Despite the fact that there was no apparent surveillance, Christy still kept her voice low.
How the hell do they ever reproduce?
Same as everyone else, I guess. Except for the fact that there are so many muties that it must be getting harder for some of the women to bear children.
That's not what I meant. I mean, how does one of them ever know if the other wants to have sex? They don't look like they'd ask.
Maybe they have that organized like everything else, and it happens once a year between harvesting the crop and skinning the deer.
Doc had been lying in the dark, listening.
It is so easy to mock, my dear Ryan, but who are we to poke fun at the way they live? Does it not strike you that they have a system appropriate to the environment in which they are forced by chance to live?
I wasn't dismissing them, Doc. They get by pretty well, especially as keeping themselves isolated means they're chilling themselves in the long run. Have you noticed many kids running around? It's getting harder for them to reproduce because they're too damn inbred, and maybe too strict. You saw how they treated that guy Taggart a couple of days back, and they haven't been exactly friendly toward us.
Mildred had risen from her bed and was now looking out the window.